Well, I'm a bit nervous, to be honest. I'm delighted to be here with you. I think you've all made a great effort to come out in this weather for this breakfast, and I appreciate that very much as well. I came through all the snow and the journey yesterday, and I met Richard Watts along the way, and we had a bit more fun on the way, and then last night had a lovely meal, so I do recommend Richard and Sue. They cooked beautiful. We had coq au vin. So there you go, and very nice it was too, so thank you for their hospitality as well. I thought what I'd do this morning was, I thought I'd do it in a kind of testimony way. I have a little bit of a story, just how I came to faith, my upbringing and all of those kind of things. And then along the way, obviously that journey included me going to Turkey, wanting to minister and reach out to Muslims, actually all over Central Asia, but I was focused in Turkey. And I thought I'd just pop in a few stories as we're going along there, and hopefully, well, I won't bore you, I hope, and hopefully there'll be something of interest for you along the way. So let me introduce myself. My name's Greg, obviously, and there I am in my church. I come from Stourbridge yesterday, which is new to me. I'd never heard of the place before. It's in the Black Country. I'd just about heard of the Black Country. But that's where God would have us at the moment. This is my lovely family, or the latest picture that we've got of them. I think that was at Christmas. I've got three boys. If you want a weird fact about my wife, we were both brought up in the Roman Catholic tradition. My mother's name was, she's passed on now, but her name was Mary Teresa. And when she was confirmed in the Catholic Church, she chose the name Elizabeth. She married my dad and ended up Mary Teresa Elizabeth Ellis. And so my wife, I met her, she's Portuguese, and her name is Mary Teresa. She was brought up in a Catholic church and she chose the name Elizabeth. And she married me, and she's now Mary Teresa Elizabeth Ellis. So, isn't that a bit weird? That's just the beginning. Let me tell you the rest. I thought I'd tell you a little bit about my home life. I was brought into a family that was somewhere between working class and middle class. Back in the 60s, there was a bit of an emergence of people who were getting out of working class and breaking into the middle classes back there. Mum worked for a building society, so that was quite posh. And Dad was an engineer, worked for companies like Smith's Industry and Hawker Siddeley. And we did all right. I was somewhere between the oldest and the youngest person in our family. I was the middle of three boys. I have three boys. It gets scary, doesn't it? So anyway, I'm the middle of three boys. I was never old enough to do anything that seemed like fun to me, and I was never young enough to behave like a kid. So ever since, I've had an identity crisis. My school life. I should say my school went through a very difficult experience while I was there. They discouraged any other educational institute from ever accepting me when I left. I often wondered what letters might end up, well, my mother wondered what kind of letters might follow my name, and it wasn't a BA or an MA or even a doctor before it. It was more ADHD and ADD and ODD and OTT, or just naughty, I'm not too sure, but I've been called them all. Then there was my religious life. I said I was brought up in a Roman Catholic home. Well, not quite. Mother was a Roman Catholic, and they always get their way, as you know. Dad was a high Anglican, and I didn't understand the difference, to be honest, when I went to either one. But apparently, it's all Henry VIII's fault. So I got brought up in a home where Adam isn't responsible for all the sin in the world. Henry VIII is. And so that was my upbringing. Dad promised and Mum delivered, and we were brought up in a Roman Catholic tradition. We did it all. We were baptized into the Catholic Church. We did our first confession, our first communion, our confirmation. We did it all. We went to all those extra religious lessons on a Thursday night to meet with the nuns who taught us everything that we needed to know. We just forgot it all because we wished we were outside playing football or rugby or cricket or something of that nature. But we were there with the nuns receiving our religious education. My interests include rugby. I love rugby. I used to play a lot of rugby as well. I like cricket. I was a great opening batsman and I could spin the ball a little bit as well. I love food, and that'll come up in a minute. Well, hopefully not, but a little more information on that in a minute. I like cheese, I like wine, and I'm interested in those things, but I've noticed that as I became older, I've become more interested in things like antiques and history. I don't know whether that just goes with your age or something, but that's my story. I like antiques, I like history, I love culture, and most of all, I love people. I could go to a station and enjoy the afternoon just sat there watching everybody go wherever they go. An airport to me is a wonderful experience until we get on the plane. I just love seeing all the different people that there are. My career, I was a chef. And that began, funny enough, in a rugby club. And I started cooking in a rugby club and advanced to a race course. I used to cook at Cheltenham Race Course. And then I ended up cooking in pubs and hotels and fancy restaurants. I've cooked for homeless people. I've cooked for the Queen. I've cooked for the Queen on several occasions. And on one occasion, I was arrested while cooking for the Queen. I'm not going to tell you the story. Another time, enough to say this, do you know, you obviously do know, that the Queen, obviously the police work for the Queen. It's their ministry, if you like, is to help her govern the country and keep us all, in law and order. And the Queen came to lunch. I was working at Claridge's Hotel at the time. And what they did is, instead of doing a check on every single person all the time, they would pick 60 people who worked in the hotel and run a check and make sure there was nothing untoward. And so there was something untoward with me. And it was my turn to get picked, and they vetted me. And right while I'm cooking her food, the police came up. And I was taken away, and screams of the chef, leave him here, come back later, we'll not let him go, and all of that kind of stuff happened for another time. Anyway, they did release me eventually, and therefore I'm here this morning. Faith, how I came to faith. Actually, you know what? I was going to ask for a Bible when I got here, and I knew they'd have one behind me while I was... Can I just get this? Because I would like to share this with you. If you can get into here. Okay. So this is how I came to faith. I was 25. I was working in a restaurant in the Cotswolds. I met a girl on the reception and I fancied her. And she was a Christian. And so, as all non-Christians do, we suddenly become intelligent on the things of faith. And so I had to start doing some research. And I read the book of Revelation. I had an AV version of the Bible. And I was given it when I was baptized into the Roman Catholic Church. And it came with me everywhere, but it never, ever got opened. And I met this girl. I thought, I'd better find out something. The best thing to do is just go straight to the end and find out what happens in the end, you know. So I didn't bother with any of the other books or anything else. I just wanted to know what happened in the end. And I thought that Revelation was... Well, no one can understand it anyway, so we'd have a short conversation about the book of Revelation. We'd find out what happens in the end, and then we could move on with my agenda. So I read a chapter every night. I never understood a single word of anything that I was reading, to be honest. It was all a bit confusing until I got to here. And I read these words. In Revelation 21, it says this, "He said to me, 'It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. Those who are victorious will inherit all this, and I will be their God, and they will be my children.'" In my version, it said son. So it's kind of started to speak to me, and then I read this. It said, "But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, and those who practice magic arts and idolaters and all liars, they will be consigned to the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death. Well, I was terrified. And I mean, I can honestly say I felt like the weight of the world was on me. And I had always thought that if you're a Catholic, you're sorted. It's the others that need to sort themselves out. And I wasn't sorted, because I felt very much in the category of those people. I wasn't a murderer, but I was a liar, and I was immoral, and I began to find myself among those numbered that would experience a second death. And the weight was overwhelming, and I can tell you now, and I couldn't have told you on that occasion, I couldn't have told you in the morning, it probably took me a few months to find out. But on that night, I cried out to God in desperation, and he heard me on a bed in some potsy hotel in the middle of the Cotswolds. The God of heaven and earth heard me call out to him, and I can tell you now, I couldn't have told you then, I was born again that night. The Spirit of God entered into me, and I was born again, and I went from being terrified to being at peace with God. Now, I hadn't heard all the details at that point, but enough to say that my journey had begun. The God of the heavens and the earth heard me call out to him, and that was the beginning of my journey. Now I want to go to the title that I put. We'll come back in a moment. But I'm challenged by this, because I've called our little thing this today. I thought it was quite clever. Bacon, eggs and Muslims and a men's breakfast. Bacon. I love bacon. I didn't put that down as my interest, but it's the food side of me. I love bacon. And I love Muslims. Do you know, I think they're given the wrong press in our press. There are some pretty rough things that go on in the world, but you know what? The majority of them are amazing. They're hospitable, they're lovely, they're friendly, they're good, they're just amazing folks. And I've had so many friends that are Muslims. But I love bacon, I love Muslims. The trouble is, I can't share what I love with the people that I love. And the reason is because they are preconditioned to never ever taste bacon. Isn't that awful? They are trapped in a world that prohibits them from ever receiving bacon. If any of them was to break the rule and taste some bacon, then other people in the community that they live in would not be impressed. They would be in trouble. They would be put to shame. You laugh, but this is really true in Turkey. They would be put to shame. Life would be difficult because they broke one of the cardinal sins. Do not touch bacon. Well, I kind of laugh at that. That's ridiculous, isn't it? But it's not ridiculous when we change the word bacon for the Lord Jesus Christ. Because he's like bacon to Muslims. They are preconditioned to not receiving him because they are brought up in an environment that they are told that he is bad news, not good news. Their Christ is not the Christ that is revealed to us in the scriptures. And when you bring the Christ revealed in the scriptures to Muslims, they are preconditioned to reject it. You can live without bacon, but you cannot live without Christ. So guess what the Muslims have done? They've got halal bacon. Bacon made with beef. It's disgusting. It's just not real bacon. And as much as they try, they cannot reproduce bacon, because you need a pig to make bacon. But they've done their best. And there are some similarities between halal bacon and real bacon, but those of you that know the real bacon know that what they're giving you when it's halal bacon is, well, it falls short of real bacon. And so it is with their gospel and their God. It falls short of the real deal. And we need to learn to help them to receive something that they are brought up to reject. That is our challenge. How do we bring the real deal to people who are preconditioned to not receive it? It's impossible. But you and I know that with God, all things are possible. And so I wanted to tell you a little bit of my journey and my efforts and my ministry. And hopefully you'll hear some stories of people who really did come to faith and receive real bacon, the real Lord Jesus Christ. So my journey, I became a believer, I told you, in a hotel back in, 1990. I became a believer in 91. I went to Moreland's Bible College, if you've ever heard of it. They really helped me understand what happened that night when I called out to God. They taught me the basics of the faith. They gave me this beautiful framework, which I still use to this day, to help me understand the scripture. I learned all about that garden at the beginning of time, the sin and the sacrifice that took place there. And then there was this place called Haran and this man called Abraham and this pagan was just taken out of nowhere and suddenly he found himself in a relationship with God, and I could relate to that. I thought, yeah, that was me. I got that Catholic upbringing, but I was rejecting it all the time. I got saved out of some kind of life that I'm not proud of now, and I was found by God. And then I learned about Egypt and the desert and the promised land, the capital city, the exile, the restoration, the sacrificial system, the priestly system. It's a good college. And eventually we got to Christ, and there he is, the precursors in all the way through that Old Testament, and suddenly he's there in all his glory. And then he said to me, go and tell everyone else. And that's what happened to me. I went to Moreland's and I found out about my faith. I was discipled, at least in my brain, about it. I can't say that I really got it all, but I was given it all. And I'm still working it out now. I remember I went to Turkey and I was doing a book table on a street, a bit like this, book table, put it up. It was all lefties, and, you know, there was all everything Karl Marx ever said, and loads that he never, all over the place. And then I was stuck in the middle there with some Bibles and stuff like that, you know, and I'm giving it out. And some JWs come up to me, and they said to me, you know, they started questioning me, and they said to me, you know, do you believe that Jesus is God? Well, they told me at Moreland's that the answer was yes. So, yeah. I mean, like, here it is, you know. I couldn't say I really understood that, you know. And anyway, I got a bit scared and we had this conversation. Eventually, thankfully, they left. And I'd done all the stuff. But man, I'm so young when I first came to that faith, you know. And I believed all the heresies when I went to Bible college, you know, and they had to tell me that these are the mistakes that people have made over a period of time. This is the real deal. So I'm there behind this table and I go through this experience, and one of my co-workers come up to me and I said, oh, I just had some JWs, you know, and they said something about, is Jesus really God? And I'm wondering. And he said, oh, don't worry about that. He said, it's really easy, isn't it? He said, look, the disciples worshipped Jesus, and the law, the commandment said that you were to only worship God. And so if he received their worship, then he must be God or he's a fake. And for me, it was like a light went on. I thought, he is. He really is God. And that was one of my little growing experiences along the way. You see, I didn't come out of Bible college knowing it all. I might have been able to answer it all up here, but it hadn't all been enlightened at that point in my heart. I had a head knowledge and not all the heart knowledge that I do today about the Lord Jesus Christ. He told me to go, and I went. And I went in obedience to his instruction there in Matthew 28. Go and make disciples. Go and teach them to obey. And that's what I did. I went. I went first to the streets of London. Became a Christian. Before I went to Moreland's, my friend and I, a plumber from the Cotswolds. Lovely, lovely guy. Best man at my wedding. I was the best man at his wedding. We both came to faith at the same time. You know, I was being baptized. The day I got baptized, his girlfriend came to the church. And I was baptized, and she kept talking about me to him, about this guy who'd come and claimed to have this faith in God. And he was jealous of her and talking about me. So he came to church because his girlfriend was talking about me. And we ended up best mates, and his story. And we began, and we wanted to do mission. We just wanted to do it. So what we did was, it's a small church in the Cotswolds, a place called Chipping Camden, if you ever go there. Back then there was about 30 or 40 people in the church, and we asked them all, we said, we're going to go and minister to the homeless. So we wanted everyone to give us a fiver, and we were going to go to London. And there was all these sweet old ladies, they're giving us all a fiver, you know. We had a wedge of fivers, you know. Then we went clubbing down in London, and actually that isn't the way it worked. So we went out to give fivers out, you know, and we were there through the night. You know, some homeless people don't want a fiver. We were giving them all some money, and that was our first taste of mission. I will say this for that little church. Thank God for that little church. Because even though our little mission to give everyone a fiver who was homeless in London, if we sat down and thought about it, it was the most ridiculous idea. But our hearts, they wanted our hearts to be blessed. They wanted us to learn to try and experiment and reach out. Whatever it looked like, it didn't really matter. The fact that we were trying was great for them. Both of us ended up on the mission field full time, and serving God overseas. Began on the streets of London giving fivers to people who were homeless. God begins some things, and they are strange, but eventually he works it all out for all of us. So my first trip was to London, and giving out 5 quids. Wherever. I went to Moorlands Bible College after the first year. I went to this welcome meal. It was a bit like this, you know, we're all sat around these tables, everyone starts talking, you know. They said, where have you been? Oh, I've been in Burkina Faso and I've led all these people to the Lord. And what did you do? Oh, I've been working in this church and doing that. And they were superheroes around this. They said, what have you done? I said, nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I hadn't done anything. And they came and they asked me, would you like to be on a short-term team to Turkey? I said, where's Turkey? They said, it's near the Mediterranean. My eyes lit up, my ears lit up. I said, oh, I don't mind doing a month in the Mediterranean. Little did I know that that was the beginning of a step towards Turkey and what would become my long-term ministry. I went to Turkey. I went the same year to Romania. Ceausescu had just finished his regime, and there were a load of kids around stations at the time. Used to sit on these hot water pipes, and we went out and we built this home, and we put a kind of Romanian mum and dad in this place, and we built this place up. My mate and I, the guy I went to London with, and he ended up staying in Romania and making that his ministry place. I went to Uzbekistan, had to go on a... I didn't know it was Turkey. People said, how do you know it was Turkey? Well, I didn't know it was Turkey, but I thought, if I go to some other places and I don't like them as much, I'll decide it's Turkey, you know, or wherever, whichever one I like the most, I think that's the one I'm going to choose. So I went to Uzbekistan. It's the first time I ever got off a plane and wished I could get back on it. There were all these Russian KGB agents that they never smile, you know. As nice as you are, they never smile at you. And so I went through, it was a bit of a scary old experience. But anyway, I did 3 months there, decided, no, I really don't believe God's calling me here. Turkey is a much more welcoming place, and the people are much nicer. And that is literally how I chose to go to Turkey. I went to reach and teach the people of Turkey, to baptize. I did teach. I taught in church, taught people what I knew, and shared that as much as I could. I began an Iranian Bible school in Turkey. I was a part of a team that started this Iranian Bible school, and loads of Iranians were coming to faith. We began a Bible school. We began a Bible school in Turkish as well. So I got the opportunity to fulfill that part of the Great Commission, as it were. Go and teach them to obey everything. But my biggest part, I think, was in a little cafe down the road where I used to meet with my Muslim friends. And I would try and convince them of the case for Christ. And I mean, these were rough guys, my kind of guys. But I loved them, and I did see some of them. They came to faith. One particular guy, I met with him, and he came to faith, and his extended family came to faith, and there must be, I don't know, 15 or 20 members of their family that came to faith and came to our church, and that was really great. There were so many that didn't listen, didn't want to listen, didn't care, but it didn't stop my passion to share the gospel with them. I loved it. I gave this guy a CD, the Jesus film, and it's a kind of really corny film made from Luke's gospel, and Jesus is a bit stiff, and he just reads Luke's gospel. He just kind of speaks Luke's gospel out, but they love it, so that's okay. We got one of the language it is. It's a Kurdish dialect, and I gave it to my mate, and he watched it. Well, we were playing a game of cards one day. He was playing as well, I spilt some tea on him or something like that during the game, and he had a fit, and there was a big old show. It was all a bit messy. And so I needed to repair the relationship. So I asked my friends, how do I do this? And they gave me some advice about repairing the relationship, the way to go about it culturally, and what you needed to do. None of it worked. The guy just didn't want to speak to me again. That was it. We were cold as ice. But he had this CD. Anyway, sometime later, I went in to watch one of the football matches. I was a Fenerbahce supporter, and so I went to watch Fenerbahce in the pub there, and we're watching the Fenerbahce game. I walked in, and this guy was sat there, and I walked in, and he said, come and sit with me. I thought, wow, we're going to make peace, and that's okay. He'd had a few, so maybe that's why he wanted to make peace, but anyway, he invited me to sit with him, so I sat with him to watch this football game. And two guys opposite, they're listening to us talk, and they said to him, oh, where's your friend from? And he said, oh, he's from England. And they said, oh, you know, I don't like the English, you know, what are you doing? And he said, and this guy who had not spoken to me for nearly 2 years, he turned around and he says, this is the nicest guy I've ever met in my entire life. Now, he hadn't spoken to me for 2 years, so I don't know what that says of his friends. So he said, this is the nicest guy. And they said, oh, well, you know, they said, great. He said, he gave me a CD about the life of Jesus. And he's a nice guy because he believes in this guy called Jesus. And if you watch this film, he said, you'll see that Jesus was a really nice prophet. And so they go, oh, we don't want to know about that kind of thing. And he was a rough guy, and he said, you're going to sit there and you're going to listen to the whole story, and I'm going to tell you. And these guys, they were too afraid to say anything else, and so they sat there, and he began to tell them and talk to them about Jesus. The guy himself, he said, I can't become a believer. You know, it would be bad for my family. It would be bad for the cult, you know, the people that he lived amongst. And he never, to my knowledge, became a believer. But he treasured the Jesus film. Another friend of mine, I gave him the Jesus film as well. He watched it. Imagine watching the whole of Luke. Which bit is the best bit in the film? You know, I'm thinking, I said to him, you enjoyed the film? Loved it, he said. Oh, really? I said, which bit did you like the most? Well, he said, it's obvious, isn't it? I thought, okay, here we go, resurrection, you know. He said, the widow's mite. The widow's mite, I said to him. Are you sure? Oh, he said, beyond any shadow of a doubt, it's the widow's mite, isn't it? I said, well, tell me why it is the best part of the story. And he said, well, he said, there are all these people and they bring all these great gifts and offerings and they're all well-to-do and they give their things and this and that and t'other. And he said, and there's this little old lady that gives nothing. See, to him, it was nothing. Gave nothing, but the prophet Jesus honored her. And if he can honor her, he could honor me. And I was thinking, I've never seen that in the story before. For him, it was the fact that Jesus would choose lowly people and honor them, and not the people that he thought from his world are the ones that we all honor. And that was a big shift. And I thought, wow, it was beautiful. Anyway, yeah, lovely guy. So I saw some people through teaching. come to faith as well. I baptized Turks, I baptized Kurds, Armenians, Kazakhs, Uzbeks, Azeris. Saw lots of baptisms. Great. Absolutely wonderful. And I say all that because I want you to know this, that the Church of Jesus Christ is growing. It never shrinks. It never, ever shrinks. The church is only growing. It might be that there's a gathering over here that aren't gathering in quite the number that they used to, but it doesn't mean that the church is not growing. The church is growing. When I went to Turkey 20 years ago, there were 400 known believers in the whole land of Turkey. 80 million people, 400 known believers. There was about 18 churches, and some of you might not think that even in that number of 18, some of them were churches because they were just two or three people who were gathering. I wonder, how many churches are there in Tunbridge Wells? Ever thought of that? How many churches are there in Tunbridge Wells? I'm going to take a guess. There are more churches in Tunbridge Wells than there were churches in the whole of Turkey 20 years ago. How mad is that? It's not right, is it? But there was 18 churches for 18 million people. Today, there are about 5,000 known believers. People who don't like bacon are receiving Christ. And the church is growing. Percentage-wise, at a phenomenal rate. Patience-wise, we're impatient to see it grow even faster. So that's my story. I know who sent me. I know who saved me. I know who sent me. And my journey took me to Turkey. PI didn't send me. Some of you have heard of PI, I'm sure. They didn't send me. Though they certainly facilitated my going, and I am so grateful for them for doing that. I think they went through a bit of experience as well and grew as a mission during my time. But I know who told me to go, and it was Jesus. And he told me to go. And we went, my wife and I, and we saw fruit. And we had failures, and we made mistakes, and we saw some fantastic results as well. Because we knew who had sent us. And then, finally, just to finish off, I look at it today. I mean, here we are in the middle of Tunbridge. What does all this mean? You've heard about a guy who had a bit of a weird background, who's come to faith, who went to college, who learnt the things that he should about the faith, and then sent out to the mission field. I mean, it's a nice story, and maybe, you know, you've enjoyed seeing somebody who's gone through this experience. Hopefully it might have encouraged you. But the real thing that I really want you to get is that we have a massive challenge. Do you know, 93% of mission is focused outside of the Muslim world. 7% is in the Muslim world. That's terrible. And we haven't gone there, and now God's sending them to us. And we've got to learn to reach the Muslims that are living in our country. It's our turn to be hospitable. It's our turn to welcome them. It's our turn to help them to receive what they've been conditioned by their upbringing, by their culture, to not receive. It's impossible. It was impossible for me to go to Turkey and to see these people come to faith and these churches be established. But with God, all things are possible. It is possible that you could meet a Muslim and have something to share with them, that we might begin to see something, even in this country, where the Muslims begin to receive their bacon.